Okay, so we're going to start the next session. Good afternoon, everyone. I know it's been a really tough day, right? You get lots of information and stuff like that. Hopefully, this session is going to be fun for everyone here. Just before we get started, just a show of hands, who went to the other session that's on New York taxis and stuff like that? Okay. The reason why I asked that is we're going to have the same kind of interaction on a different kind of app, okay? And this session, thanks a lot for coming to this session. I really appreciate your time. This session is about how do you go about operationalizing your analytic solution, right? And I'll get to it, of what do we mean by operationalizing? And this slide today, you have already seen this multiple times. At the different sessions, you will have walked through the different parts of the Cortana Analytics Suite. Now, in this session, we're going to experience a few of this as well. Hopefully, it's going to be fun for everyone as well. And many a times when we talk about, you know, whether it's a new product or a new service, people ask about what are the different kinds of customers that we work with, right? This morning, at the keynote, you saw some of the discussions about the customers that we've been already working with. You've seen some of the videos. Now, these are an extension to some of those customers that we already have on the website. Many of these customers are at different stages of implementing the Cortana Analytics Suite. Some are already in production, some are getting to production, right? And today, what I really want to do in this session is to help you understand a journey, right? A journey that one of the customers that I work with, right, has gone through since last year, right? And hopefully through this journey, together, we learn about the different pieces in the Cortana Analytics Suite. But more importantly, you leave this room having an understanding of how you should go about operationalizing your solution. Now, to start off this story, let us take an example of a game studio. Now, for a while now, since last year, I've been working with a lot of the internal game studios. And beginning of this year, I've been working with a lot of some of the external game studios as well. So by game studio, I mean some of these teams that produces titles that you love, like Halo, Fable Legends, Minecraft, and so on and so forth. Right. Now, for today's discussion, we're not going to go to specific to which game studio it is. Let's call this Studio X. Right. And they're going to produce a game which we're going to play in a while. Right. Now, and the whole story here is, in a lot of these game studios, every time they produce a title, huge amount of data gets generated as and when you play with the game. Now, huge amount of data gets generated as and when some of your console crashes. These crashes, or crash dump, if you will, get sent up as well. Many a times, whether it's an online game or whether it's a console game that you play at home, this telemetry helps the game studio understand how is the service performing. Especially at game launches, you need to make sure that you have sufficient capacity in order to meet the demand, right? But then over time, as they start looking at this data, they realize that they need to be one step forward. They need to have a way to make use of predictive analytics to figure out, one, the gamer's behavior, right? Two is, by understanding the gamer's behavior, can they do something about it, right? And this story that I share is not just representative of the US game studio. For a while before I moved to the US, I spent about a couple of years in Shanghai, and I worked with the game studios there as well, the big game studios in Shanghai as well. And I realized they tell similar story, right? For example, today you play a game, right? You're happy, you play a game, you get on a quest, you put on this armor, you kill this monster, right? The first time you kill the monster is too powerful, you die. You get unhappy. You get dissatisfied. What do? Right? You tweet about it, right? You go to social media and you write some stuff and say, hey, you know, this monster is big, hairy, stupid, right? Now, at the same time, you might come back to the game because, you know, every time you play a game, you have this tendency that you want to win. You go back to the game, you kill the monster again, the monster did not die, naturally, and you get dissatisfied again, right? And then you lose interest along the way, you stop playing the game, right? To a lot of these game studios, and you see a lot of online papers and discussion on this, they refer to this as a gamer that's churning, right? Why? Because they were not happy. They could not satisfy that urge to kill the monster. But what if predictive analytics can help, for example, by analyzing your presence in the social space, right? By analyzing your game behavior, how long you spend in the game, how many weapons you acquire, how many friends you interact with, how many people are there in your group, and so on and so forth. If we can figure out that you are at a point that you're going to churn, and you're going to churn by the next game session, or you're going to churn within the next 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, then you could get into a situation where you are a gamer, you get into the game again because of predictive analytics. Because we're crunching the data, getting the data processed in a way that it can fit into a machine learning model, you suddenly find a cave. And in this cave, you have the most awesome armor, you have the most awesome weapon, and you put it on, and you happily walk up, and you slay the monster. You are a happy gamer, right? Now, today's story is really about how does someone goes about operationalizing this solution, starting from the game's logs, right? Now, at the same time, it's not about just predictive analytics. It's not just about operationalizing the solution. Any game studio that you visit, if you go to any of the offices, and again, this is representative of game studios, not just in the US, one of the things that you will see at the hallway is real-time statistics about the pulse of the business. In this case, that business is the game, right? How do you go about, well, being able to balance predictive analytics, being able to do batch processing so that you get reports about gamers' behavior, and also getting a real-time pulse of the business? That's an area where Cortana Analytics Suite can help, right? Now, to start off this, we're going to start off with a demo. We're going to start off a demo where we assume we have data. All of us here in this room, we are going to be gamers, right? With a game that I created a week ago. And hopefully everybody has fun, right? But the whole idea here is not about the app that you're going to play, right? That's just a way of helping you experience what kind of data gets generated. We want to get to a point where you have data, huge amount of data, to a point where you can do a dashboard that looks like this, right? But more importantly, a machinery runs in the background day after day, crunching through the data, right? You have confidence that if things does go wrong, you are able to fix it. So to start off this, let's play a game. Now this game, everyone, you can use your laptop, you can use your phone, it's called Super Family. I chose this because a week ago when I was trying to prepare for this workshop, I used to do a lot of sessions on customer churn from a telco industry's perspective. But I realized that if I were to share the same telco story, people would have seen it, that's one. Two, it's not fun. And then while I was working through this game, through this slide deck over the weekend, my son comes up and say, hey, let's talk about Super Family. We are the Super Family. Right? And therefore, what you see there is really three person, my son, my wife, and myself. The Super Family. Right? And all of us here in this room can be Super Family. You can go to this URL, and you're going to get to a site where it says, what is your name, your hero's name? Give yourself a nice name. And when you click Start Game, you're going to see the different characters you can play. Now, this game is not a game as in game, but a game as in you are generating data. You can click on each one of them. Now, every time you click on each one of them, you're playing a game, right? Imagine you're playing your Xbox, you're playing your Wii, you're playing your other kinds of online games that you have. Now, this data is going to go up to Event Hub, but more importantly, it's going to be analyzed by Stream Analytics in order to give you or the game owners a sense of the game. Now, right now, what you're seeing here is a dashboard that I built. And as and when you go to the URL and you click on the game, oh, that's amazing. While I'm talking, you guys have been actively playing the game. You see yourself showing up here, right? Bob, the builder, that's nice. Christina, Stiller Roos. And these are real-time data, right? We are analyzing this. Your data, every time you play a character, goes up to Event Hub. Stream Analytics starts analyzing this. But more importantly, it shows up here. Now, as and when you generate this data, one of the things that I have not added to the app is I could realize that you might be a churning customer, and therefore you get a pot of gold, you get the armor, you get a weapon, and you slay the monster, right? And we're going to show you more and more of this part of this story as we unfold. Now, we're going to leave this running. Unfortunately, we ran out of GIF. So the top hero, at the end of this, we're still going to take a snapshot of it. You get bragging rights, right? that you won a game on Happy Family. And feel free to ping me and we can talk about how we can reward you as the top hero. Right. Now, a word of caution, as you play the game, please focus on the presentation. The presentation is about operationalizing your analytics solution. Now, let's leave this dashboard for a while and get back to, if I want to build a dashboard like this, let us orientate you to this dashboard. You have the real-time aspect of this, which is this one. You have things that needs to be crunched, like the number of weapons used, whether you use one weapon to six weapons, the gamers count. But more importantly, you realize that in a dashboard like this, or any kind of business dashboard that you will build, what happens? Most of the time, this dashboard is very reactive. You see that the gamer has left. They have never come back for the past 30 days. And you start doing marketing campaign. By then, it's too late. Right? Today, there's Minecraft. Tomorrow, there could be Minecraft 2. And that person will have churn. Right? And therefore, you realize that a lot of business owners started introducing into this kind of dashboard the ability to see into the future. And in this case, we're analyzing customer churn. And we're saying, hey, you know, for all gamers between California and Washington State, how many of them has churn? And if I were to drill down into this, you're then able to get an idea of the age group of gamers. In this case, you see that we have gamers ranging from 18 years old, I think this is 18 or 15 years old, all the way to 80 years old. Oh, that's amazing. But more importantly, you see that for those that are 80 years old, right, they are married, and this is the profile of the gamer for this specific game called Super Family. At the same time, I can say, well, let's analyze by state, and let's take a look at the customers or the gamers that have churned. And I click on this, and you realize that Power BI provides you with very powerful visualization to make that happen. Now, the question is, this seems like magic. Where did the data come from the point where you play the game till it gets here? That's really the crux of this session, and which I'm going to show you in a while. Now, but before we get into that, let's unveil the other piece of it. Every time you click on a character, for example, if I were to get to that website, and I go arcar.ms, let me just use another one here, Super Family, and I say my name is Talk, I start the name, a game, and I click I'm Kit Swift. What happens in the background? Right? Now, every time you click one of those, and as you play the game, a signal gets generated. This signal goes up to Event Hub. So let me show you how it looks like. So right now, what I'm logging on is the Azure portal. And Event Hub is one of the services within the Cortana Analytics Suite. So what I've done here before this demo is I've created an Event Hub. And let me show you where it is. So I've gone to Service Bus and I created an Event Hub call. In this case, let me make sure that I have the right subscription. CA Workshop 2015. And here I've created one Event Hub which I used for an earlier demo this week, this morning. And I have created an Event Hub called Super Family. Right, and you see the number of messages that goes through. Now, once I have this Event Hub, I've taken care of the first problem. Lots of gamers playing games, handling huge amount of data being ingested into Azure. Right? That's the first part of the pie, or the puzzle. Now, the next thing that I need to do is, now that data, I've gotten it into Azure at scale, I need a way to analyze this at real time to power those real-time dashboards. And therefore, if you were to go back to this console, and I'll to show you Stream Analytics. You'll see that I've created a Stream Analytics job called Super Family. And when I click on this Super Family, you get right the dashboard for this job. And if I click on Input, you realize that I've created an input called Hero Stream. And this data is coming from Event Hub. Okay? Now, once this is done, I've also defined a corresponding output. In this case, this output is Power BI. If I were to drill down into it, you'll see that I'm creating a data set in Power BI called dataset underscore superfamily. Right. And once this is done, I have my inputs and I have my output. The next thing I'll do is I'll do a query. Now, in this case, I have a very simple query here. It simply says, well, take all the data that comes to Event Hub for demo purposes. Right. Do not do anything to it. Just push it out to Power BI. That's what you saw in the dashboard. Now, but Stream Analytics, the power of Stream Analytics is not just about that. Right. The power of Stream Analytics is the ability for you to do Windows query. Right. And being able to say within a time window of, say, 30 seconds or 1 minute, how many gamers are Mr. Strength? How many gamers are Mr. Evil? Right. And being able to do this kind of analysis. So as part of this, I've also created another job, which I call Super Family 2. And if I were to click onto this, you'll see that I'm using the same input, which is from Event Hub. I have a corresponding output, which is called PBI Super Family. And if we take a look at this query starts unfolding itself. I say, get data from GameStream, which means I'm getting data from Event Hub. I'm going to group by hero character over a tumbling window of 50 seconds. Now, Stream Analytics provide you with a lot of semantics, not just tumbling window. You could have moving windows as well. And that allows you to express very powerful temporal concepts. At the same time, once I have this, I'm saying select the time. And then in this case, you realize I have not fixed this. I'm selecting, say, in this case, the game timestamp, hero character, and the count as number of heroes. And I'm writing into PBI superfamily. Now that I've done that, if I were to run this job, what happens on the Power BI end of it? So if we were to get to the dashboard, and if I were to open this up, you'll see that because I've run the prior job, you'll see I have a data set. In this case, I call it superfamily, called DS superfamily, which is on the left-hand side here. And if I click on this, this shows me the exact data that I've written from the Stream Analytics job to Power BI. That is the magic behind that dashboard that you saw that is already that's moving and it's real time. So let's get back to the dashboard. I see that everyone is very active in playing the game. Mr. Sparky is doing a great job. Continue playing the game. Let's get back to the slides. So we say we got to a point where I show you how data is generated. I got you to a point where you understand that you could analyze this using capabilities in the Cortana Analytics Suite, which is Event Hub, Stream Analytics. Now that we have data landing somewhere, you could build a model on the data. But more importantly, remember, we talk about a way of stitching this end-to-end solution together. How do you go about doing it? This leads us to the data factory, right? I'm a PM or program manager on the Azure Data Factory team with a huge amount of passion on data science. And I love working with customers building this end-to-end solution. And what you're seeing here, this Game Studio story is not a makeup story. We have generalized some of the terms to protect some of the sensitive IP. But they came to us about a year ago. They have been building their custom infrastructure, whether it's PowerShell script, custom program that they've written, trying to stitch this together. But more importantly, they also have built infrastructure to monitor this, right, and to write to some dashboard that they have within the team. And they say, well, how can Data Factory help? What is Data Factory? Is Data Factory a factory? What does it do? Does it manufacture data? Or what is it, right? So, and we get asked a lot as well, every time we get into a conversation, to say, well, what is factory? Why do you guys call the factory? And before the factory, I work on a team called SSIS, or SQL Server Integration Services. I spent a number of years on that team. And SSIS customers ask me the same thing as well. What is factory? Right? How is it the same as SSIS? Right? Today, we're not going to talk about SSIS or what's the relationship. But the whole idea here is, let's forget SSIS for the moment. Let's forget factory for the moment. Think about just the word factory. What does the term factory do? Anyone wants to try? When you look at this diagram and you see a factory, Sure. So just to repeat it for everyone in the room, he mentioned that a factory generates data. It could be a laptop, it could be some component. But the whole idea there is a factory, like what this gentleman has said, right, produces some finished goods. That finished good could be that laptop. So if you try to take that mental model, we say, well, a factory, any factory that you're used to, definitely have to acquire raw materials. This raw materials in the laptop case, you're trying to assemble them to get to the final piece, which is the finished goods. But more importantly, even after you've done that finished goods, you need to be able to deliver it to someone, right? Because if you don't sell it, right, that finished good sits in your warehouse, you don't make money out of it. And therefore, if you try to relate it to a data perspective, right, since we have a passion for data, this really looks like the following. Your raw materials could be your data sources. What are your data sources? Your data sources could be an on-prem SQL server that you have. It could be an on-premises Oracle server that you have. Or it could be a bunch of files sitting on some file system. Those are raw materials. It's a fact. It is what it is. Right? They are where they are. And you need a way to somehow being able to do ingestion, bring them into a place where you can efficiently process them. Right? And therefore, often when you start building an end-to-end analytic solution, these are the things that will always be back of your mind. Get data, figure out where the data is, figure out how often the data gets produced, figure out a way to ingest them at scale into a place. And finally, this place must have the capability to process them. So if you think back to your factory analogy, your factory, in order to produce that final laptop, could have fit-for-purpose machines. This machine could be doing welding. This machine could be putting the transistor chip onto something, right? And so on and so forth, right? Or if it's a food processing factory, this could be carrots. They're trying to chop up the carrots, getting the carrot to the right shape, bottling the carrots, delivering it so that people say, wow, it's a yummy carrot. And therefore, you need to be able to transform and analyze or use these fit-for-purpose machines to transform this into the goods. Now, from a data processing perspective, what do you do? You could be merging data, combining data. You could be doing aggregates on the data to say in the case of this gamer, how many hero characters do I have per month? You could be cleaning the data. You could be, well, given this data, I want to do batch predictions to see whether this gamer is going to churn, right? And finally, you need to deliver them, right? You want to deliver this insight to someone, and therefore, that's where Power BI plays a really good role. The Cortana, as part of the Cortana Analytics Suite, play a good role as well for you to have a conversation about the insights that you have obtained. Now, so if you map this, we started off with game logs, which you have generated, and it's still being continuously generated. Most of the time, the gamer's profile, depending on which company that you talk to, some of these are more personal or sensitive than the other. They might say, I do not want to bring them all into the cloud. Right? And therefore, they could be sitting on some on-premises machine somewhere, well protected. But because they want to take advantage of this processing, they want to get some of this non-sensitive data into the cloud in an efficient manner on a day-to-day basis, right? They could be masking the data, just uploading ID, and so on and so forth. Now, and once this data gets uploaded, in this case, we say, well, Azure Blob Storage could be one place that you ingest the data into. You have now all your game log files. You have some non-sensitive customer data. And today, Azure provides you with lots of great capabilities for doing that crunching of your data. It could be an HD Insight, which is a managed Hadoop service. It could be SQL Data Warehouse. It could be an Azure DB and you running some custom logic in a stop procedure. You want to be able to transform and combine the data at scale, right? Now, and finally, this transformation produces some results or intermediate results. You want to continue being able to say, well, take this result and analyze them. And finally, the last piece of it, often there's some movement because if you have to process data in block and you have BI tools, whether it's Power BI or it could be any reports that you have, most of the time they talk really well with a relational database. And therefore, you would want to move some of these insights into a relational DB so that then you can query it. Now, and then, of course, the last piece of it is once the data is in the right location, you visualize it. Now, when you map this to a data factory concept, we start off with, regardless of what data you're processing, whether it's in blob, whether it's in document DB, which is a NoSQL store, whether it's a file on a file system, let's generically describe this as a data set. Right? Data set is a term that every one of us is familiar with, whether you're a .NET developer, whether you're working with SQL Server. It's a term that always comes back. See a data set as a way of describing, one, where to find the data, two, how do you connect to the data, right? And three, how often do you want this data to be produced? And then you see all these fit-for-purpose machines as an activity, right? You can see it as a task, right? The point there is an activity is really a discrete unit of work that you'll perform. You could say, I want to be able to run a Hive script running on an HD Insight cluster. You could say, I want to run a stop procedure running in Azure SQL DB. You could even say, well, not only do I want to do that, I want to invoke Azure Machine Learning to do batch prediction. And once you have all these different steps, if you will, you need a way to group them together. That's when we call it a pipeline, right? A lot of people refer to this as a data pipeline as well. And see it as a way of logically grouping discrete units of work together. See it as the assembly line in your factory, right? That allows you to, one, logically manage them. Two, if things go wrong, you have a boundary that says, well, only this pipeline is affected and not all the other pipelines are affected. Now, so with that in mind, data factory, what does it do? In order for you to describe this step that says, my transform is done before I start combine, my combine is done before I start analyze, you need to have a data-driven workflow. When I was with the SSIS team, we spent a lot of time working with customers, defining what they call the control flow. And essentially, a control flow is also a discrete unit of step. But customers spend a lot of time trying to build logic into the control flow that says, well, if this data is arrived, it's already in SQL Server, they do a query on the SQL Server before I start the data flow task. Here in Data Factory, data is first class. And as you'll see in a while, because it is first class, it allows you to describe what we call a data-driven workflow really, really easily. But more importantly, it allows you to use this data-driven workflow to operationalize your analytic solution. Now, and therefore, a lot of people are saying, well, you tell me about factory, you tell me a beautiful story about game. What is factory? What is Azure Data Factory? Now, if there's one word that summarizes Azure Data Factory, or one sentence, if you will, it is a managed cloud service for building and operating data pipeline. Now, what we mean by that is, every time after we get to this point when we talk about the factory, a lot of people will ask us, well, does factory actually process the data? Answer is no. Factory helps you coordinate the processing of the data. The actual processing is done by your HD Insight cluster. The actual processing is done by your stop procedure in a SQL database. We help you orchestrate, if you will, or we help you compose movement and processing, regardless of which environment they are in, including on-premises servers. And then the next natural question is, well, okay, at this point, I understand what a factory is, but what value does a factory provides, right? One is, of course, we provide you with a way to orchestrate or compose movement and processing. Today, Data Factory has what we call global data movement capability. And what we mean by that is, regardless of whether your data is on-premises, in the cloud, or it is in US, Europe, Australia, Asia, we have a global data movement capability deployed in all the major Azure regions. And therefore, over the years, from the SSIS experience to a lot of this work done about moving data, we have internalized a lot of learnings around, one, how to efficiently move data, right? Because at the end of the day, think about it. If you're trying to move data from on-premises to the cloud, your pipe is only that fat. If you do not efficiently make use of this pipe, then your data movement could be slow, and that could reduce your time to insight. That's one. Two is, between your corporate environment and the cloud, as and when you move data, right? A lot of problems that people will initially face would be, one, how do you make sure that this movement is resilient to failures, right? And if things does go wrong, How do you restart at the right time? All these are good questions and good challenges. Now, over the years, whether it's SSIS and all of the other effort that we work around building the sync service and so on and so forth, we have internalized a lot of this concept. And because of that, we have made this available as part of this global data movement capability. Now, the next question that people ask is, okay, well, it's fine. Data Factory allows me to compose movement. I know you have an efficient way of moving data. And it allows you to coordinate processing in HD Insight Cluster. But my processing doesn't happen daily. My processing only happens every quarter or even every month. But every time I need to process data at that specific time of the quarter or the month, it's a huge amount of data. I need to process it at scale. But I do not want to leave a cluster up and running or a Hadoop cluster up and running for that period of time because it's going to be sitting, one, idling. Two is I'm paying for the idle time. And therefore, when we work with customers before the factory, they have wrote a lot of scripts to spin up an HD Insight cluster, do the work, and tear down the HD Insight cluster. Right? And what we have achieved in Data Factory is to say, well, at the end of the day, you might not want to maintain this big data processing infrastructure, which is a term which we call automatic infrastructure management. You tell us what Hive script you want to run. You tell us what PIC script you want to run. Data Factory underneath the hood spins up a HD Insight cluster on your behalf, runs whatever that needs to be run. And then when it's idling, based on the time that you define, we will tear down the cluster. And you only pay for the time when it's up and running the PIC and Hive script. Right? Now, when we get to that, the next natural question that people will ask is, well, that's great, but we have lots of expertise in tuning a Hadoop cluster to process data at scale. Right, whether it's the map reduce settings or whether it's the virtual memory that you give to the Java process, blah. And therefore, if you tell us you are spinning up an HD Insight cluster, how do we give you the optimal setting that we know works for our workload? Now, again, Data Factory, when we spin up the cluster, you can tell us what settings you want us to spin up the cluster for you. And we'll spin up exactly per the optimal setting that you have defined. Right now, the third piece is this whole idea of single pane of glass. What do we mean by that? When I was on the SSIS team, I spent a lot of time working with customers. I drove a lot of the monitoring management experience in SSIS. And we do this kind of focus group, we do surveys. And one of the questions that we are always asked is, well, if you have this magic wand, forget about what you're hearing, what you're seeing in the product at this point in time. From a data integration perspective, what would you like to change? Or what would you like to have? And one consistent feedback that we always get in a lot of these sessions is, well, if I really have that magic wand, I want a way, do not ask me to look at different tools in order to manage my movement and processing. I want a single pane of glass for monitoring and management, period. And therefore, one of the areas that Data Factory envisioned that we get into, right now you're going to see some modest experience, is the ability to say, if you're doing movement, you're doing processing, regardless of whether it's on-prem, in the cloud, or in some other services outside of Microsoft, we provide you that single pane of glass for monitoring and management. Now, this message is super powerful because of the following reason. In the past, when we do traditional or classic data warehousing, right, you have very well-known set of tools for monitoring and managing it. But as and when you started looking at the big data space, right, you might be using other sets of tools as well. And therefore, if you look at 2012, Gartner came out with a quote, and in the quote, Gartner says, the data warehousing industry is at a tipping point, and that was in 2012. And that was because at the point in time, people are figuring out what is big data, what is traditional data warehousing. Do they complement? Do they compete? What are the pros and cons? Right? But today we realize that, well, each one of it has its reason to stay. Right? And therefore, you really need a way to be able to manage this in a hybrid manner. You know, every time we talk hybrid is cloud and on-prem. But here what I meant by hybrid is different kinds of technologies, right? And being able to, one, make sense out of it. Now, if your pipeline runs on a day-to-day basis and it's churning along, your business stakeholders get the value that they have, awesome, right? But sometimes problem does crop out. When I was on the SSIS team because of the monitoring management experiences that I was driving, one of the stories that people share with us is the following. They say every morning at 8:30 or 8 to 9, we commute. We commute to work. And at that point in time when we did the survey, mobile phones was not so prevalent, right? you have pagers, and so on and so forth. They say, wow, I really hate receiving a pager message. Why? Because if the pager message comes, it means I really have to rush into office, quickly log onto my machine, and figure out what went wrong, because the pager tells me some process is broken. But then, of course, we get the other fair share of people that they are very positive looking. They say, well, I receive a pager message, and they smile, and they continue enjoying the rest of the commute. Why? Because that message told them 100% of the jobs ran successfully last night, right? But the crux is, things does happen, right? Data is never perfect. And therefore, if you want to have a single pane of glass for monitoring and managing, right, an analytic solution, if things just goes wrong, we need to allow you to fix it, and we need to allow you to figure out what went wrong and fix it fast, right? And therefore, what Data Factory allows you to do is exactly doing all that. So right now, we're going to transition a bit to what powers that dashboard. So we started off with this dashboard. Well, and we have Steelers, Rue, and Stain Dog being the top gamers. Awesome. Right. Now, let's unveil what is powering this dashboard. What is generating the data contributing to some of these charts? So let's take a look at this, which we call the Data Factory diagram. Now, most importantly, what I'm showing you today, after this session in the evening, tomorrow, over the weekend, you can stem out the exact same demo, minus the stream analytics piece of it, and you can play with Factory. And I'll show you a while how it does that. We started off with game data, the game data that you generated. If you were to click on this and take a look at the schema, you see that this game data says what is your profile, when did the session started, what is the duration, what is the source IP address, what kind of game are you playing, is it a multiplayer game, number of weapon used, how many people do you interact with, who are the people that you interact with. Now, often in a lot of these big data pipelines, you have raw data, right? And therefore, we use blob as a way to store the data, right? You could also imagine your stream analytics job having a pass-through query that's continuously writing to blob to archive the data while still powering your real-time analytics. And once this is done, in this first stage, we're actually doing a very common practice within the big data community. We are partitioning the data. Why? We are taking the data and partitioning it by year and month. And if you take a look at the Hive script that's powering this, you'll see that we have a raw game event table. This is an external table, meaning this table, the data resides on Azure Storage. Where is the location? The location is described by a parameter called raw input. And then if we continue drilling down, we created another external table called partition game events. But in this case, you'll realize that we're partitioning it by year and month. Now, we introduce some staging table in the middle, but at the end of the day, if I scroll all the way down, you'll see that I'm inserting into the partition game events table, selecting from the staging table of raw events, and I'm making sure that this is for a specific year and month. Now, this pipeline that I've set up is processing data on a monthly basis, which I'll show you in a while, and that's the reason why I define as month, right? Now, once this is done, what happens? Remember, we talk about data-driven workflow, and therefore we say that this Hive process produces a piece of result called partition game events. If I were to drill down into this and to show you the schema, you'll see that it has the exact same schema, but on top of this, underneath the hood, we've added a year and month, right? And if I want to see what does it look like underneath the hood, I can click on this partition game event. I can take a look at the source of how did I describe this. You'll see that I have my structure. But more importantly, this resides on some blob storage container called profiling sample, a log folder, another folder called partition game event, and I'm organizing it by year, month, day. So once I finish running the Hive script on blob storage, I'll expect data to be in this folder, this container, organized already by year and month. Why do I want to do that? I'll show you in a moment. Now, once I'm done with this, I have processed the data. The next thing that happens is you realize that if you look at the data earlier, every time we generate some data. We won't know where you are unless we know your profile, but you can move. But we know your IP address. So a very common practice is to take your IP address and do reverse geocoding, right? And therefore, I will join your IP address with a code, geocoding dictionary to figure out which state you're in, whether you're in Washington, whether you're in California. And therefore, this particular pipeline here is running a pig script. And if I were to show you the pig script, you'll see that we are loading the data. We are making sure that some folders are cleaned up. We load the data from pig storage, comma delimited. This is a schema of the data. And we load the IP address, which is from the geocoding dictionary. But more importantly, I'm joining it by the source IP address so that I can get the state information. The last piece of this, and we added this piece only to demonstrate that a lot of the time after you process the data, especially for game data or areas where IP address is sensitive, people want to still retain some information, but yet anonymize where the IP address is coming from, right? And therefore, what you see here is just a very simple technique that a lot of people use as well, is out of your IP address, we remove the fourth octet, the fourth piece. So you have x dot y dot z dot something. We remove the last piece, which we call the octet, right? And therefore, you'll see that we are doing a regular expression, and we're only taking the first three pieces or three components of an IP address, if you will. And finally, we store this clean data into log output, which again, write back to storage. Now, once this is done, one of the things you'll realize in this data factory solution that I built is all these little boxes here. So what this means is that in order for me to start this thing that I've clicked, I need to make sure that this and this are all ready. Right, and if I were to click on one of these, if any of this is not ready, it will not start processing. Or more correctly, if any of this data is not ready for the specific year, month, or maybe day, it will not start processing. Data Factory underneath the hood takes care of this data dependency for you very easily without you writing a single line of code. Right. So what this particular pipeline is telling you is, if this two piece of data is not ready, meaning I've not partitioned the data, or my geocoding dictionary is not available, do not start this process. Now, the remaining part of this pipeline does the following. Now that I have all this enriched information, I could do several things. One is I could combine them with my marketing campaign information. These are your gamers' profile, so that I can build a chart that says for each gamer, how long did they play, and so on and so forth, which is this first box that you see here. Now, I'm not going to drill down into it due to time constraint, but this is essentially a Hive script. Now, what I want to bring your attention to is these other two pipelines. One, which I say predict game is gold miner, and the other one, which I call predict gamers churn. Now, these are predictive pipelines. And what I meant by predictive pipeline is invoking an Azure machine learning model in order to figure out, one, whether the customer will churn, as per what we described earlier, within the next 3, 6, 9 months. And in some cases, in a lot of games, you realize that I think in the 2000 period, there's a global phenomenon where you can be a gold miner, right? Where you mine for gold within games, and then you resell the gold to other people who want more gold. That is a so-called fraudulent kind of activity. And a lot of gaming studios want to figure out whether you are illegally mining gold and then send you an email or block your IP addresses. Right. Now, for today's purpose, we're going to show you the churn pipeline. And one of the things that you see here is we're invoking Azure ML. And if I were to show you the pipeline source, what this is trying to say is use the Studio Churn, Studio X churn model, and use the data that I've already created, do batch prediction on it, put the data finally in this area called game churn block 2. Now, then what is inside this Azure Studio X churn model? If I were to open this, and I were to show you Studio X churn model, you see an endpoint. This endpoint refers to an experiment that has been published. Now, for those that are not started doing Azure ML and so on and so forth, you work with an experiment. Once you're happy with the result, you publish the experiment. You get an endpoint, right? And in order for you to authenticate against this endpoint, you provide an API key. Right. Now, how do you do it? Let's take a look at the experiment. Now, this is a super family churn model. Let's take a look at the reason. And you'll see that in this churn model, I have several characteristics. I have your profile ID. I have a session start, as per what you saw. But I also look at your negative tweets within the last 30 days, your positive tweets within the last 30 days. Whether you're married, maybe married does have a factor in affecting whether you churn or not churn, because either your other half, whether it's husband or wife, did not agree with you playing too much games. How long did you spend on the game? Do you have lots of virtual currency? Because if you have lots of virtual currency, maybe you will not churn, because moving to another game, you start from scratch. Your source IP address with the fourth component removed. What kind of game type it is? Whether it's multiplayer? How many weapons acquired per game? Some studies show that if every time you play a game and you acquire some new weapon with new characteristics or new powers, you might continue the game because you want to discover the next weapon, right? And continue, you have number of players in a group, users interacted with by their profile ID. And this is interesting because, again, there's a lot of studies that show that if you join a game like a quest and you go in a group and you have a large group, you form a friendship or a camaraderie between the people in the group. You go in, it's not just to play the game, you chat, you have fun. Because they're there, moving to another game is probably difficult because they might not want to move. Right? So all these are factors that indicate whether the customer will churn. And because this is training data, oh, this is data that we have, you'll see that we have a label called churn. Now, one of the interesting things within the machine learning community is this data set is what we call an imbalanced data set. What an imbalanced data set means is there's very little people that churn, but that's what you want to figure out in the first place. And you have people that do not churn, which forms the majority. If I were to just build any random model on top of this, that model is going to be optimized for the non-churners, and it's not going to be accurate in predicting customer churn. Right. And therefore, Azure Machine Learning provides you with lots of techniques that allows you to deal with class imbalance. One of the things that we're using here is called SMOKE. In the book that you received this morning, you actually see how we use the SMOKE algorithm. And SMOKE actually helps you deal with the class imbalance by being able to do upsampling and downsampling as needed so that you get classes that make more sense. So if I were to take a look at it, you'll see that because I ran SMOKE, the class imbalance problem is not that bad after all, right? You'll see that I boosted out some of the churn piece of it, right? And it boosts this in a make sense manner, not in a random manner. Now, once I'm done, in this kind of experiment, it's very common for you to break into training and testing data set. So split is a very common step. And finally, I built a model using a support vector machine or boosted decision tree. Now, I know. Every time I talk to people about this, people say, don't tell me about algorithms. It's too complex. See this as a way to figure out whether the customer will churn or not churn. It's just different techniques, right? And therefore, finally, you score the model. And it's very common for you to evaluate the model to see how well is your model performing. Now, these are all generated data, including the data that you have given. The center line that you see there is really a 50-50 guess. Anything below the center line is bad because you might as well not use a machine learning model. Just do a random number or flip a coin. Anything above the line is great, but you want to be mindful that you do not want it to go all the way up on the X and Y axis because that leads to a situation which we call overfitting. And overfitting is bad because your model is so perfect for this data that you're training against. When you have new data that comes in, which is what you want to predict on, it lost its ability to generalize. It lost its ability to predict. And your performance is really bad. Right? And therefore, you really want to balance. I would not say this two model, which one is better. But in this case, both has reasonable area under curve, accuracy, and precision. Right? And there's different metrics within the data science community that helps you think what is good and what is bad. Now, then the next natural question is, a lot of us are not data scientists by training, right? We either have a passion for data science and we start learning, but we often do trial and error. Data scientists do that as well, right? Like you have an algorithm, in this case, it's simply called support vector machine. And it has things called lambda. What is lambda? There's this thing called number of iteration. What are all this? You say, my goal is to give me a really, really perfect model. Why don't you just allow me to do different combinations without me trying to fill in different values? I don't even know what the values are, and so on and so forth. And actual machine learning is really powerful because it provides you with this thing called sweep parameters, which essentially says, I want to optimize for churn, and I want to optimize for my area under curve, precision, accuracy, or F-score, which is a very common thing. And what this does is it will run through the number of runs and trying to find you a perfect model, but without you going through trial and error. And that is super powerful because before joining Microsoft, I helped one of the startups build one of the models. I was doing a lot of trial and error. It's a mind-boggling, frustrating exercise. One day you get, oh, yes, this is the right parameter. How do you know that's the right parameters? Right. Azure Machine Learning provides you with super powerful tool to do it. Now, to speed up time because of time constraint, I will have run the model and I will have published this as a web service in what we call a predictive experiment. In the book that you have, you'll see all this described. And finally, once this is published as a web service, now we'll see the super family churn model. You get your API key, which you can copy, and you get an endpoint, which Azure Data Factory will invoke, which is the endpoint that you saw earlier on. Right. So bringing everything back together, once you have all this, this runs on a day-to-day basis. Right. And crunching things end-to-end, and finally landing it somewhere, leading you to the dashboard that we started off with. Right. So we started off with a dashboard. I open up the dashboard, showing the machinery. This is the power of Data Factory, but more importantly, this is the power of being able to use services in the Cortana Analytics Suite, right, in an end-to-end manner, stitching things together, having confidence that you have this machinery in the background, right, that is always making sure that things are well-coordinated, well-orchestrated, if you will, and if things does go wrong, you can fix it immediately, right? Now, let's get back to the slide, and let's just summarize what you've just seen. You've seen Event Hub. You have seen me using Azure DB, but in this case, it's not SQL DW. I could do that. You have seen machine learning, HD Insight in action. Probably one of the things that I did not show you is I'm using an on-demand HD Insight cluster. So if I were to show you this diagram and click on this pipeline, all this Hive script runs on what we call on-demand HD Insight cluster. And if I were to click on this and show you HD Insight, you see that this runs on HD Insight on-demand. That's essentially the automatic infrastructure management. Okay. Now, with that, and finally data gets landed, you see the visualization in Power BI, but that does not prevent you from being able to talk to Cortana and say, which are the gamers that were churned, and have an interactive conversation about it. Now, with that, we're done. Thank you, everyone, and let's take Q&A. Yep, thank you. Sure, so we'll take about 2 questions to be mindful of time. So we have one there, and we're going to give you the mic, and we'll take the other one from there. Thank you, everyone. Yep.
Okay. We have done actually the training of the model once, but if we are talking about true operationalizing, we have to continuously train it.
That's right.
So we have seen that how we can publish this, so execution of it, but how we can do the continuous train?
Sure. So the question is, I've seen a one-time training of the model. Now, data changes. How do I retrain it? If you go to Azure Machine Learning, and let me just find the right one. And if you click on the model that I've created, you'll see that while you publish it, you can publish it as a web service or a retraining web service. Let me just click on this. Can you see the retraining web service? Yep. Now, once you have the retraining web service, you're able to retrain the model. There's a second part to it, which is after you retrain the model, you need to patch the original model so that it's operationalized. That's right. Thank you. We'll take one more question and we'll end. Yep. Can we help with this gentleman here, over here? Or you can just...
My question is on Azure Data Factory. So in right now, if you want to suspend any pipeline, you have to suspend individual pipeline. You cannot suspend whole Data Factory.
Yes.
And similarly limitation on the data gateway, right? If you want to, if you have two pipelines, you have to install two data gateway to transfer data from on-premises to Azure.
Sure.
So are there any plan to come up with these limitations in near future?
So to repeat the question is data factory. Right now you want to suspend the pipeline, you can only suspend the pipeline. Can I suspend the whole factory? Or can I suspend the gateway, which is used for on-premises connectivity? The answer is yes. No, right now we can't do that. It's a great feedback. We definitely have to look into that as well. Now, one of the areas that Data Factory is improving on is this whole monitoring management experience. And over the next few months, I'm not committing to anything because it's being recorded. We are definitely looking at making the monitoring management experience awesome, because in order for you to monitor all this data movement and processing using Data Factory, the monitoring management experience have to evolve from what you saw in that diagram view to something that you can work with in an operational manner. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.